Before we get to our interview for this week, we just want to take a minute to thank our sponsors. Lisa Seward, team leader of Seward Group of TTR Sotheby's International Realty, has lived in the Alexandria, Virginia area since 1987, raised her family here, and knows the in and outs of the real estate world. Awarded by the Washingtonian as a top agent in 2018, 19, and 20, Lisa's team is comprised of seven women who all have hyper-local specialties.
A diamond-level top-producing team for Northern Virginia, they know how to hustle, as their business is 99% based on client referrals. No other team, agent, or brokerage will spend more money, resources, or intelligent strategy on marketing your home for the most amount of money the market will bear. You can find the Seward Group's listings locally, regionally, nationally, and globally, where you will be provided with listings containing architectural photography and video, 2D and 3D floor plans, as well as a unique URL.
The Seward Group treats clients like family, and every single team member loves their jobs. Lisa believes that the best part of her job is helping her clients with major life transitions as they move on to the next chapter in the story of their lives.
If you are looking to transition to your next chapter, please visit www.seward-group.com or contact Lisa Seward at 703-298-0562, or you can email her at lseward@ttrsir.com for more information. This episode is brought to you through the support of Tony Miller and Ameris Bank Mortgage. Buying a home is one of the biggest purchases most of us make. House hunting can be exciting and disappointing at the same time. Some people find the perfect home in 3 days. For others, it can take months.
Tony has seen it all and understands how you feel. Once you finally find the perfect home, she wants to help you quickly find the perfect mortgage. As a native Alexandrian, Tony is your local lender providing first-class service to ensure your loan application process goes smoothly and you have the best loan option for your financing needs so you can start your life in the home you have always dreamed of.
Personable, professional, organized, and efficient, Tony is skilled at anticipating the needs of her clients before they know what they need and can help guide them through an often overwhelming process.
To find out more on how you can secure your dream home or refinance your existing home, contact Tony at tony.miller@amerisbank.com or look her up on Facebook at Tony S-L-Y-E Miller. This episode is brought to you by Alexandria local Robin Arnold of McInerney Associates Realty. Honest, professional, warm, lighthearted. That's Robin. She's a longtime Alexandria resident and businesswoman, well known for getting the results her clients want.
In keeping with the tenets of WeStat, Robin is an active and contributing member and often leader of her community. As a steadfast supporter of local small businesses, a cheerleader for school programs that serve those most in need, and a relied upon sponsor for local causes and events that serve the greater good, Robin believes in the mission of collaboration and conversation to creatively build a community that helps each other.
If you're looking to buy or sell a home in the Northern Virginia area, Robin can help you get what you need efficiently and effectively. To learn more about Robin and her work, contact her at robinarnoldsells@gmail.com or at 703-966-5457. We started this podcast because we want to have really honest, authentic, and even uncomfortable conversations about anything, but especially the things no one wants to talk about. And our hope is that these conversations can build a community of people who might feel less isolated and alone. So we are two Jesses, and this is We Should Talk About That.
All right, so we're getting ready to end our summer hiatus and get back into it, get back into the circus. So we thought, did you like that? The circus of normal life, right? Kids going back to school, maybe you are looking for a new job or decided to take the route of serial entrepreneurship like me, getting ready to start my third business, and you need a little... what? A little help? A little sanity?
Inspiration? What would you call it? Yeah. Kick in the butt? I don't know. Every time we talk to Jen Folsom, which we have several times for this podcast and some of our other ventures, I think to myself, I should be doing more with my life.
You know, she is definitely a force, but she doesn't do it in like an asshole way. You know, she does it in like such a cool, like, hey, this is me. I'm just like shining my light bright. I'm taking my walks and my runs. I'm, you know, boating and making pies and also killing it in the corporate world. So she's definitely one of my favorites. I definitely am very inspired by her. And yeah, I love listening to her words of wisdom because they're really applicable. They're very like tangible, I think, for women who are looking to make a change or who are trying to figure out how to be more effective and more efficient, I think, like in the work-life balance.
Well, no, not the work-life balance, because that doesn't exist, which is one of my favorite things I learned from her. They're like, stop chasing it. It's unattainable. There is no such thing as work-life balance. You need to lower the bar for yourself and realize that sometimes work is going to be way out of balance and sometimes life is going to be way out of balance, and those things are okay. I also think it's very on brand for her that since this episode launched, she has taken another big giant step in her career, and she is now the vice president of growth for ICF Next, which, you know, she's just constantly challenging herself and finding new ways for her career to fit the point of life that she is in. So congratulations on the new job, Jen, and congratulations to all of us on re-entering the circus.
Normal life. Yeah.
The circus.
I mean, whatever. It's all the same.
Oh, and happy almost end of the hiatus.
All right, I'm ready. I'm ready to rumble.
It's almost time to launch a new season.
I know. I can't wait. It's going to be a good year.
I hope.
It's going to be a good season.
Fingers crossed.
Hi, Jess.
Hi, Jess. How are you?
Well, funny you would ask. I just had a very chaotic situation play out in my house. I thought I had all my bases covered. I was down here in my studio / office that I actually have to share with my husband because he's, you know, working from home. And I had my kids set up with their lunches outside. And my husband is upstairs at the dining room table taking a very important like Zoom call. And I thought I had everything worked out. I'm down here on my call and all of a sudden I start hearing screaming. And I think, okay, is that screaming or like pain or is that pleasure? Like, are they just like goofing off and he got off his call and they're laughing? But then I hear, it hurts, it hurts, it hurts. And I'm like, oh shit, what has happened now? So here my husband is like holding his laptop with one hand, trying to have his call. And then my 7-year-old is hanging over the sink, hysterical, because he's been stung by a bee. Poor little guy. And I actually don't think he's ever been stung before. So then I'm like, oh Jesus, what are we going to do? What if he has an allergic reaction? What if we have to go to the hospital? We can't go to the hospital. I mean, I go to the dark place really fast in my mind. I'm very good at staying calm during emergency situations. So I like, you know, give him some Benadryl, give him all the things, get him iced up, get him upstairs. I think I've hung up on my conference call that I was on. I don't know. My husband's like back to his call and I get my son set up. I think he's okay. He's got the iPad. Now they're all like locked in their rooms on technology because that's the only way I'm going to get anything done.
That is certainly a moment of discomfort, but
my heart's still racing.
It's also an excellent segue into who our guest is today.
I know. It was almost like I planned the whole bee thing. But today our guest is Jen Folsom, who is the author of a book called none other than Ringmaster, Work, Life, and Keeping It All Together. Jen is a working mom. She has twin boys that are 17 and then a 12-year-old, as she would describe him, firecracker. She's a wife, a daughter, sister, friend, yogi. And this is my favorite part. She plays on an old lady soccer team. amateur farm to table chef, vegetable gardener, paddle boarder. She loves bourbon. Hello, I'm going to be partaking in that tonight. She's got all kinds of stuff that she's doing. Plus, she is the vice president of client delivery at Reva Solutions, Inc. in Washington, D.C., which is an IT management consulting firm. So already, Jen, I feel like most of us are not being as productive as you are just in your bio. But I think what we wanted to have you on here to talk on the podcast about your book and your philosophies around parenting as a working mom. But now we need to talk about, please give us some tips on what to do now that the circus location has changed and it has all come to our house and it's staying here for forever. So welcome, Jen.
Well, thank you for having me. And you know, it's funny. So I wrote this book because I felt like so many of us, so many working moms, and it's really geared at working moms, but I made sure to make sure that this is a book that from the book cover design to the advice here can be read by dads, grandmas, anybody, right? So this is not just a pink covered book about how to be a working mom, but I particularly saw working moms really hold themselves up to some ideal that just doesn't exist. This work-life balance, like there's this thing we're chasing, this elusive balance point, and you know, either like I'm not making partner yet, or my kids aren't reading yet, or they don't know how to ride a bike, and I'm the worst mom ever. And it's just always not enough. And what I realized over, you know, the last almost 20 years, my twins just turned 18 last week, which is kind of crazy. So I have some, at least legally, adults around here.
And too bad they can't get out to do anything.
And that might be better for all people right now, if you know what I mean. You know, what I wanted to really do is empower working moms to understand that, you know, there is no balance. Stop chasing it. It just doesn't exist. You know, instead, I want people to embrace the circus and just know that if you're working and you have kids, your life is a circus. That's just the way it is. But the idea here is that you could be the ringmaster of that circus. You can be in charge of what goes into each of your rings, your work ring and your life ring and your you ring, because that you ring still exists. But the ringmaster decides sort of what goes into those rings and where and when the spotlight shines. And in normal times, which seems kind of quaint to even think about a month ago, you know, that could shift. You know, it wasn't sort of like year to year. It was more like month to month, week to week. Now it's like minute to minute. Like 3 minutes ago, you had to shift everything into making sure your kid's not having an allergic reaction to a bee sting. It didn't matter that you're about to record a podcast.
Yeah.
It just didn't. Right. Yeah. Minute to minute. So now we're back on the track. And then, you know, if someone crawls under Jess K's lap, you know, and under the screen, we know like it's just life. It's just where we are. So really trying to think about that framework for where we are right now.
So I think that there are so many aspects. We've talked to various people over the last couple of weeks as we have been trying to navigate the anxiety that people are feeling under these extremely unique and specific situations. And the theme that keeps coming up, which I'm hearing was one of the main purposes of your book, is, you know, kind of going easy on ourselves, adjusting the expectation. I don't want to say lowering the bar, because that feels like that then a judgment in and of itself, but having a realistic setting for our bars and for working moms. I think that that is one of the themes that I hear over and over again, is that they feel like they are doing everything badly, that they are not succeeding in any of the rings. Yeah. So I loved the concept that you brought into the overall theme of your book, which is the flexibility, and that, you know, if you are focusing on work right now, that doesn't have to be a permanent situation. If you are focused on your life right now, if you're focused on you, that there is a push-pull and a flexibility to the very specific tips that you have running throughout your book that I think is so important, because it's not a static situation. It's a moving situation. And
totally. Yeah, no, and I think you talked about the toxic positivity. I mean, like, everyone who says that homeschooling is going great, I just want to take a moment. Like, what we're doing right now is not homeschooling. Homeschooling is a very specific choice that families make for a variety of reasons, where they're doing that full-time or full-time-ish. They're not also trying to work full-time. What we're trying to do right now is stay alive, to keep working so we can keep, you know, food on the table and a roof over our heads, and educate during a global pandemic while quarantined. That's where we are right now. So, like, let's just have a reality check and have a little bit of more grace for ourselves and for one another. So, you know, I'm not trying to out homeschool someone. I don't have the most awesome chart to color code. I'm dragging surly teenagers out of bed at noon every day. Yeah, it's not, I mean, and I don't even care that they sleep late because that's the only time I can work productively. So, okay, fine. It just is what it is. And you know, I think that, the one good thing that might come out of this horrible situation is that the struggle that all working parents face, dads, moms, you name it, it's all out here on Zoom for the whole world to see. Everything we're doing, from trying to, like, you know, check a 12-year-old's packet of homework they sent home while I'm on a video call with my boss trying to advance a sales pipeline that's a little behind schedule and it's a big problem. You know, this is just this constant multitasking, and we're actually really good at this. I think the people that might be struggling with this a little bit more are dads that haven't been that involved. Right. So now they are in the middle of this and they're working at the kitchen table. They can't just go disappear at the office. And so I think there are some really important conversations happening about, you know, what the load actually is and how to share it a little more equitably.
I've been waiting for articles to come out, and I'm surprised that I haven't seen so many of them. But I'm like, surely somebody, some woman, some working mom out there, just some woman with children is going to start writing articles about the fact that now everybody can see what I've been dealing with. That mental load is not mental anymore. Like you said, it's being publicized for all of my, like, coworkers and my entire company and for my partner to see.
Yeah.
Do you think that this, I often wonder, like, in your opinion, do you think this is causing more friction?
Oh, 100%. Like, I don't know any of my friends or people in my network that are like, yeah, my relationship with my partner is going awesome right now. This is the best time of our lives. It's like a second honeymoon.
Or my relationship with my kids, right?
Or my kids. I mean, it is gnashing of teeth, as they say, you know, every day around here.
Yeah.
And it's just hard. And it just is. And, you know, part of me wants to say to my, particularly the teenagers, you know what, like, kids today, man, you have no idea how good your quarantine is. If that had happened in my day, we'd have been standing on the kitchen phone in one place for my siblings to hear every conversation. And I just have to look out and wonder what's happening out the side. I wouldn't know from my phone. And, like, when the books on the shelf ran out, that was it for books. And we had three stations. Like, I'd have to get up and change the station. So you have no idea how good this pandemic is for you, you ungrateful teenager. But that's really not helpful conversation right now. That adds heat, not light. You know, the truth of the matter is, for my older kids, like, they're missing the end of their senior year. All the big traditions, you know, the prom, the graduation, the walking the halls, the sports banquets. These are, you know, real things. They missed their last three college visits. So now we're, you know, racing to deposit dates to make the all important decision. And they don't know their gap year. Both of the twins had accepted positions to go into AmeriCorps to do a year of service. And there's never been a bigger time for public service, but also a June departure date's looking a little unlikely right now.
Yeah.
So there's so much uncertainty. And, you know, that plays out in 100 different ways, and ways that, like, I just want you to get up and go for a run and be productive and, you know, study something. I mean, but instead they just want to play Fortnite with their friends. Like, they've regressed to 5-year-olds. And I think that that's okay.
Absolutely. That's a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
So I thought it was amazing that you have an entire chapter in your book on the mental load. And we did an episode on the worry load. And one of the things when you talk about, as you prepare yourself and your family for getting back into the workforce, should you decide to leave for a period of time and then come back in, you talk about the big conversations and how important those conversations are. And we are living in a time where if those conversations haven't happened, they are certainly happening right now. And the mental load that you or I or Jess have carried is just laid out on the table and cannot be ignored. And in order to just get through day to day, you have to involve your partner, and all of a sudden the kids have to get super involved. So those big conversations just got pushed to the forefront, whether you were ready to have them or not.
Yeah, and it's weird about the mental load. So what's on the load right now? Because it's all shifted, and it's shifted without us being really like aware of it. Okay, so I'm not managing soccer game snack schedules. Hooray, because kids can pack their own snacks. But instead, I'm thinking about, you know, do we even bother going to college next year if there's a global recession? That's a pretty big mental load kind of thing,
yeah.
Right? And, you know, frankly, I have three boys. One is much more of a self-starter than the other two, but they all need a lot of heavy lifting. I think one of the things I talk about in the book a lot was, I thought kind of by now with older kids, I'd really be able to focus on that work ring. Like I could just work the hours, I could travel, I could be all in. And the fact of the matter is, I've had to be as present or more, as involved or more as I got older. I don't think that makes me a helicopter parent. I think I've got two with ADHD, and that's kind of some learning challenges and executive functioning up there going on. But, you know, this is a time for kids to step up, right? They're having to manage their own Zoom schedules. You know, I had to drag a 12-year-old out of bed this morning before his first, you know, online classroom happened today as a test over what's supposed to be spring break. And he totally had the working from home mullet going on. He had a t-shirt on top and pajama bottoms on the bottom. Like he's seen what we're doing and he's adapting, but still like the mental load has really shifted into the things that we need to worry about and think about. So, you know, I'm looking at two different schools, 20 different teachers between the three boys, all doing something different. I mean, they're just trying to figure it out. And so now I'm like, in addition to my work being incredibly challenging right now, you know, and I run a portfolio of projects, 71 projects, 450 employees across 26 states. I'm trying to keep people working, billable, safe. A lot of people doing sort of like frontline kind of work. And I'm over here like, sorry. I know Google Classroom was all set up last week. Now we got to move to Blackboard. You know, this is just a lot. It's just a lot.
And, you know, even if you have been used to carrying the mental load, like you said, the definition of what that mental load has just been flipped on its head. And so it's a learning curve that is starting fresh for even those of us who feel super skilled at over carrying that load. The rules are out the window and we're having to redefine what the new normal is.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. My sister-in-law is a Marine Corps wife, and she talks about just the mental load of every time you move. She's like, you don't think about it, but when you move every year, like you have to figure out how your thermostat works. Like something as simple as, I'm too hot. Oh, shit, how does this work? And she always talks about carrying that, like just military spouses carry these kinds of loads and they get really good at it. You know, and I think that we're doing this right now where we think everything is taking two or three more steps. And that, Jessica's, is why when you go to bed at night, when you finally hit the pillow, you're like, God damn, I didn't do anything today. I didn't even leave the house and I am exhausted. Mm-hmm. Why am I so tired? This is why.
And also, I mean, yesterday was a bad day for me. I felt down. I felt a little bit depressed. I felt sad. And my husband said the same thing because I didn't get one damn thing done.
No, I think we need to give ourselves a big pass on productivity, right? Like with this, I'm not writing a book. No. I'm not launching a new thing. Like it's just, I need to keep people well and safe and keep advancing the plot. And I think that if you can think about what are the buckets of things that are most important to you, right? So whether it's the three rings that I talk about in the book, or it's like my wellness, my family's wellness, and my work. Can I do one thing to push it forward every day?
Yeah.
One thing. It's good.
And what that one thing used to be prior to Corona is going to look entirely different now.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that it's really causing us to reevaluate. You know, I talk a lot about in the book, like I'm completely anti Washington, D.C. metro parent. Like we took once, I think maybe about 5 years ago, we took the spring and we canceled all activities. Everything. We just unenrolled and we said, we're taking it off and we're going to add them back in just selectively one at a time. And I think that, you know, whereas we're all getting more family time than we ever wanted, I think it's really causing us to think about like, do I really need to do travel across? Was that really bringing us all joy? Because I don't miss that.
Yeah.
Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think we can think about this as an opportunity to reframe what is important and where that mental load goes, right? And if we can strip away that kind of idea of the subtraction project, what can we subtract from our lives to really focus on the things that are bringing us comfort, joy, love, harmony, peace. Like, that's really what matters right now.
And that's the gift of crisis, right? If you choose to see the gift.
It is the gift.
So you have this forced subtraction process that's happening. And, you know, fear of missing out, people have FOMO, imposter syndrome, we call it the doubt hole, all of the things that that sometimes actually drive you to make your decisions, all of it stripped away. And we are going to be given a chance to redefine a new normal. I don't think we'll go back to normal. I think that that's what happens in these times, 9/11 being one of them. This feels, have a very familiar feeling to, yeah, we're not going to go back to normal. And the power that we can choose to step into to redefine what that new normal looks like for you professionally, what that normal looks like for you as a parent, as a friend, as a spouse, as a mother, could be seen as a gift if we are able to kind of step away from all of the overwhelmed moments.
Yeah, I think this is a real big reset for a lot of people. And I think that, you know, so many families are going through really tragic events right now, very stressful. So, I mean, there's the actual safety bit, like, can we keep people safe? Can we keep them healthy? But then going pretty quickly into the financial overwhelm. I mean, we're looking at a global recession, third of the country on unemployment. I mean, this does not discriminate on age, race. I mean, it is like, it is there. So these are kind of lasting changes. You know, when I get the most overwhelmed is when I think about this is never going to end.
Yeah.
Right. How are we ever going to get back to anything resembling a normal? And I think that you just have to go back to, you know, your inner yogi and think about where can you be in this hour, in this moment? This moment is all we have.
Absolutely. We have this extra time per se, right? Because we're not, as you would call it, the shuttle, right? The after work shuttle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shuttle bus. For kids and stuff, but we're so exhausted, like our minds are kind of like, you know, our minds are going to some of the dark places and they're being overprocessed, but they're moving slower. Do you feel like you are able to access your inner yogi? And how would you like recommend, do you have any tips for us on how to do that?
Yeah, I mean, we have taken to a little bit of family meditation. When I can finally roust the teenagers out of bed, when I'm midday through my workday, I take a pause. And we had gone to Monterey Bay Aquarium a couple of times out in California, and that was a favorite place. They do this great meditation. It's free online on YouTube. You just stare at the jellyfish and it's guided. And I'm really trying to walk them through, take a deep breath, create the space between an action and a reaction, right? I'm really trying to use this as like, this is an opportunity to talk about it. I do think this is a sort of unprecedented time for discussions around mental health and the workplace that I'm seeing that I've never seen before, ever. And I'm so thankful for it. A friend of mine is in a pretty senior executive role at a major global bank. And she was telling me that on her all hands call last week with the CEO, one of the most, you know, powerful men in all of financial services, they had a counselor walking them through what a therapy session would look like to demystify it, to walk them through, because people were too scared. You know, but you think about this, like in the Great Depression, you know, that's really the first sort of time in history where you can target financial event to industry and mental health suicide. I mean, that was huge. And so I think they're seeing that, as to your point on, you know, how do we stop this negative part of history from repeating itself? I think that the online and free resources right now for yoga, meditation, any kind of breathing exercises, they've just become so normalized. I really hope and pray that we carry that into the after.
So another thing that I am interested in talking about as far as the after from your book, one of the main foundations that you talk about is the work-life triangle.
Yeah.
And using the opportunity to find the right fit in job is the most important step that anyone can go through, and that you are trying to balance your schedule and the flexibility that you need with the compensation that you require and the role that you're hoping to fulfill. And that this time is kind of a forced opportunity for people to take a look at that triangle. And I'm wondering if you want to talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I developed the triangle years and years ago and really trying to explain visually why it's not just a trade-off between flexibility and compensation, because, you know, I'm completely passionate about the pay gap for women and like, ooh, we're up to 80 cents on the dollar. Awesome. Yay us. And so, you know, I really encouraged women to think about like, be results oriented, be not FaceTime oriented. How do you drive towards metrics? Like, you know, just because you need to leave at 4:30 to drive your shuttle bus for 4 hours, it doesn't mean that you should be taking less money. Mm-hmm. Just shouldn't. If your results are there and you're driving value for your organization. So the idea is here that, again, what Jess, you mentioned, is this equilateral triangle. One side is compensation, the other side is flexibility, and the third is the role. And you can take a moment now while you're working, while you've been laid off. I mean, what if you can lay out in your driveway and look up at the clouds on this beautiful sunny day and just think for a minute, what does the ideal situation look like for you? Like, I want to work in media relations. I want to work 36 hours a week and I want to work from home on Fridays. And this is the kind of boss I want. And I've done my research on Glassdoor and I know what fair compensation is for this. Think about the equilateral triangle and then just acknowledge that it doesn't exist. You just have to acknowledge it, because if not, you're going to be chasing. You're going to be like a, what is it, Chevy Chase in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. He's like holding out for that management position. Like, you're going to be looking for this role that just doesn't exist. And I think what we need to think about is at this moment in time and for the near term that we can even count on, what's the most important role for you or side of the triangle? So is it role? And that was my experience recently after I took a sabbatical this past summer to write this book and get it to market. I came back to my old job and I thought, you know what? It's time for me to have a different role. And flexibility is not quite as important. And the compensation maybe is not the top driver. But I need to stretch me right now. I'm flat. I'm not growing. I need to move my career. And I think a lot of women get kind of comfortable in a environment that's with schedule that suits their family needs. Yeah. And then they don't take any lateral moves. And I'm like, you know what? I'm doing that right now. And that's not good. So I made this leap. But increasingly, as I think about what down the line looks like, I've got to put 3 kids through college over the next 5 to 10 years. So you know what? That compensation piece, it becomes more important to me. And on the flexibility piece, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I really thought it mattered more when I had 2-year-olds. And then 5-year-olds, and I want to be able to walk those kids to school every day and be there in that bus. But let me tell you something. You don't want a bunch of high schoolers and middle schoolers home alone in the afternoon.
I think many working moms feel like it's that beginning point. And I think you even mentioned that so many of the books for working moms are focused on that early
first few years.
Time.
Yep. And those are hard times. I mean, mm-hmm. I had my lowest moment as a working mom. I think my second week back to work, I went back to work when the twins were 6 months old and my husband was on some BS corporate travel trip that he did not want to go on. And we were all sick, all 4 of us, just wicked, wicked ill. And I finally gotten both babies to sleep at like 4 a.m. And I did something I never did. I took one of the babies into the bed with me, right? Because I didn't want to wake up his brother. And then, you know, an hour later, the alarm goes off for me to get up. So I kind of put the pillows all around him. And I sneak off to get in the shower. I bleary-eyed get out of the shower and I look and he's not in the bed. He had rolled off. And under the bed, I'd literally lost a child. And I thought, I can't do this. It's too hard. So, I mean, I know it. Like, those early times are not easy. And I think now more than ever, women need to really pay attention to the fact that they need to highlight and communicate where they're adding value. Because I think this is really the dirty little secret to getting the flexibility you want. It always has been. If you are killing it, if you're hitting your numbers, no matter what those numbers look like, and you might have to create those numbers so you can communicate what you're actually hitting. I'm not talking about just revenue and sales. I'm talking about anything that you do. You have to show and communicate an array that's really agnostic to anecdotes. It's hard numbers. This is the value that I add every day. And if you need to walk out at 4:00, you walk out with your head held high. You don't sneak out. And so now, as we're going through this recession, when people are making some really tough conversations at the leadership level about who stays and who goes, this is the time really to make sure we're communicating that value now more than ever.
One of my favorite quotes that you have is appreciate and be grateful for your flexibility. Don't apologize for it, which is very much what I hear coming through right there. Like, if you are killing it and doing what you need to do, do not apologize for the fact that you then are able to run that shuttle bus.
Yeah, my director of legal and contracts, just before I hopped on here, sent me a note, went to the whole corporate team and said, hey, I have no meetings on my calendar this afternoon. I'm going to go outside and just enjoy the sunshine with my family. Across the board was a resounding thumbs up, go do it. And so I think that if we can evolve our culture to the point where, you know, we're being very specific about, like, I'm not just showing up, you know, and I think this is what women do. I'm at every happy hour. I'm at every lunch. I don't want to be that mom. I want to be the woman who's, you know, showing that I have all the FaceTime and I'm not taking anything for granted because I'm a working mom. Or like, we volunteer to be like on the Sunshine Committee and celebrate everyone's birthdays. Like, talk about mental load. You don't need to be going to the Safeway to pick up cake for Susie and a county's birthday. You got your own birthday parties to plan. Like, just don't do that. So in the book, I talk about some very specific ways that you can show and add value. Like, you do want to be a team player, but you need to do it in a way that your boss is going to recognize it. So I always like to advise people to do the one big event, right? Like, there's got to be some big charity event that happens once a year, or the strategy conference, or when your board of directors is in, offer to be the liaison. And then, like, the real secret is, like, write a blog post about it, because every company's hungry for newsletters. And then the entire company sees your byline and your name associated with that one big event that looks like you worked on it all year, but really was like one crappy weekend that you had to pull the extra weight.
Why is it so hard for women to promote themselves?
You know, it's so much bias, and I can't really even unpack it. You know, I've had former managers that have pointed this out in my performance feedbacks, like, you know, you really ought to take a more humble approach and say more we instead of I. I'm like, really? Like, so when a male manager is giving you that advice, then you're suddenly like, well, how do I do that? Right. And we have so few role models of women who are in leadership positions who are doing it well. I think so much of it is bias that we have just grown up with, that we face, that's made us fearful. And that's why I kind of come back to the numbers. Like, the numbers can speak for themselves. So it kind of doesn't matter what you do. Like, if you are in communications and you have newsletters and blog content, if you can show that you got 25% of them error-free and out a week in advance of your editorial calendar, good. Then you don't have to go out and promote yourself. The numbers are doing it for you. But I hope that we get to a point where I feel very comfortable singing my own praises. I'm certainly not there yet.
I can think of some people within my social networks that are probably, you know, either before this, as a result of this, or after this, being locked in their house with their kids for months at a time, like, have decided, I'm ready to go back to work. Where do they start?
Yeah, you know, and I do talk a lot about this in the book. And, you know, this economic event is going to hit women disproportionately hard, right? So again, we're already in the caregiving position. So if, like, someone does get sick, whether it's your parents or your children or you or your spouse, you're going to be the caregiver. It's just, you know, full stop. You know, that's going to be the case. And you likely have been out at some point in your career, because one out of three women are at any given point in time caregiving, right, out of the workforce. So, and again, you add a wage gap on top of that, and it's very challenging. And so I talk a lot in the book about what to do specifically while you're out of that, of the workforce, because you need to be strategic with your time. And of course, no one's at school right now, but the PTAs are still cranking. So you're going to volunteer for your children's preschool and school. You just are, because it's who you are. It's what you do. But you don't have to be the president. You don't have to do X, Y, and Z. Like, I go on record, I am never a class mom. That is not my gift to the world. I will lead one committee for the PTA, something I'm passionate about, that connects to my job, where I control the meeting schedule. And so I think you really have to think about what you do in your free time and your volunteer time as your volunteer hours. So, for example, if you work in development, and talk about a sector that's just being annihilated right now because no one has the funds or ability to give, don't chair the preschool charity auction. Instead, go work for the Red Cross or any other nonprofit right now needs you, because they all do. They need marketing people and strategy folks and comms. They need people who are on the ground who can help. So you want to be able to show that you did a turnaround, or, hey, I, you know, and you don't even need to put that on your resume that it was volunteer. You know, the whole goal is, imagine your future self 2 years from now when your daughter's in kindergarten, you want to go back to work. What do you want your resume to look like? And then work backwards from there. So this idea of strategic volunteering, it should be something related to the job that you want down the line. So a couple of quick turns. There are a million online classes now, more than ever, right? So if there's any certification that you can get that kind of agnostically certifies your role. So like, let's say you've been doing the bookkeeping at your preschool and you got a tuition break to do it. Go and get a QuickBooks certification right now. It takes a couple days. You can update your resume with it. And that way a resume reviewer is like, oh, this person actually knows QuickBooks because the cert is there, right? So it kind of validates your experience. You've got the experience and then you've got the certification. Get any professional certs that you've had up to date. And a lot of these professional associations are really hurting right now and doing great online curriculum and cost breaks. If you work in HR, like, do you need to keep your SHRM certificate up to date? Were you a nurse 10 years ago? Can you get CE attorneys with their bar credits? Like, and as you're participating in these online forums through your professional association, treat that as online networking, right? Lastly, I will point you to my website because I think this is really probably what you're getting at, Jess B. You have to have a very strategic plan of leveraging your network to get there. And on my website, which is jenniferfolsom.net, under the resources tab, there's a spreadsheet that you can download that helps map your job search. It's a job search template. Because if you're in that situation, Jess B, you're probably trying to do this while your two-year-old is taking a nap and you've got 1 hour. You can't just like stare at your TV screen going, where then do I begin?
Absolutely.
Like, so this template breaks your job search kind of into a really, and it's got instructions right on this basic spreadsheet. So it's not complicated, but these are the jobs I want. This is the job I had before, is what I'd like to be doing. Marketing coordinator, marketing project manager, you know, marketing program manager, marketing associate. What to put the titles there. Then put your target organizations on the next tab. Right. So like I want to work at these, you know, 10 up and coming, you know, great brand name companies that I think are going to grow during the recession. And then third is your network of people, either in that role or in that organization. And so what it's going to do is put real quickly on your right in front of you as a visual cue where your network holes are. Like, I really want to go work for this nonprofit, but I don't know a single person there. How do I use my own network, my own social network to get there? And then pretty quickly, you need to do a two-way method. One is updating your personal brand. So that's your certs. It's your resume. You need to get like 3 or 4 people to give you edits on it. I mean, resumes are largely stylistic, mm-hmm. but you need a couple of extra set of eyes to get that ready for prime time so it doesn't look even a second dated. And then third is your LinkedIn profile. And LinkedIn is where you need to like just shut down Instagram for 5 minutes, you know, like put a pause on your TikTok dances, and you got to really focus on LinkedIn as your social media scrolling. So make sure you have the app, you're updating it. You know, I could do a whole session on how to get your LinkedIn ready because it's really that important, but it's also kind of your best friend. So the best part about LinkedIn is that you can put that organization in. If you're like, I really want to work for iHeartRadio and I think they're going to grow in this market because they're producing so many podcasts. So you put that in there and it tells you who in your network or in your network's network works there or has worked there. And so you can just use your time to get to those people. Because if you have any gap in your resume, and that's kind of like why I'm trying to be forward thinking if you're going to off ramp, because you need to think about what you want that future resume to look like. But if not, how can we reframe what you have been doing? So let's say your friend wrote a book and you helped edit it. I mean, I had a couple friends tell me with that. That should be on your resume as it doesn't need to show that it's not paid or paid outside of your workforce. What you want to show is no resume gap. So a lot of employers use these automatic resume readers right now. And if they can set the parameters, if you've been out of work for more than 3 months, they're probably not even going to even scan your resume. So, you know, we hope that this recession, particularly when it comes to sort of diversity and inclusion efforts, employers think differently, but just because of the sort of nature of online job submissions, that's why it's a black hole. They go nowhere. It's just, it's a morass. You have to use your network to get there.
Well, that's incredibly valuable information. I think a lot of it is very useful for our community who may be looking to get back into the workforce. I know as Jess and I continue to build our brand and our business, this is very useful for us as well.
I love your book, and what one of the things that I find so wonderful about it is that there are specific, easy to follow guides that help for women who are going back to work. But frankly, it just helps with life. Like, it talks about how to be a good friend or how to let yourself off the hook. And one of my favorite parts is the epilogue, which if you could just talk to us about the Folsom house rules, or maybe the Folsom frat house rules.
Yeah, it's a real frat house around here. I mean, that's the truth. And there are so many times that I've said things that I can't believe I actually have to say out loud. So the number one house rule is no hands in your pants when you're talking to mom. And that, you know, I probably reiterate that a couple times a week. You know, there's a lot of like boy parts involved, violence. And, you know, I knew that first day when our school system was closed with no notice, it closed at like midnight, right? The 12th. So that Friday, you know, I looked at my husband. I'm like, I guess we just get up and go to work. Like at 6 a.m., I'll just let them sleep and leave a post-it note on their noses. We're at work. I'll be home. I came home a little early knowing that it would be chaos. And two of my children were on the roof in a fist fight. And I thought, what the hell? And at this time, you know, I didn't thought this might be like a week or two at home. Like they're on the roof.
Is this a place that they like normally frequent?
No, not the roof. And so I thought, this is rough. So we actually even started some coronavirus, you know, family edition or edition for the family house rules because, you know, only one box of chicken and a biscuit crackers a day. You have to take a shower before you crack your first beer for my husband and I. I mean, there are just some things that like you have to have some rules. You have to have some order. But yeah, I think if you're saying these crazy things, write them down, because even now with my kids a little bit older, it's funny to think about all the crazy things like you have to wear pants at the dinner table.
Well, my favorite was naked Friday night, no naked Friday movie nights. Like
everyone's got to keep their clothes on. Although my 12-year-old did streak on a Zoom call last week when he was in shot. So, you know, it is what it is.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Yeah. It is a frat party over there. I think, just to kind of wind it all down, I wanted to leave everybody with a quote that maybe is not so hopeful, but it is a dose of reality. And you say, what I've come to realize is that in some form or fashion, you will continue to work for a very long time. And as it turns out, you will parent for the rest of your life. And I think that, wow, that's some perspective right there. I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're right. And while we feel like this time right now amongst the coronavirus pandemic is eternal, it's not. It's going to end and we're all going to be okay. And you've given us some really practical advice and some really good information. And we're super appreciative for you taking time out of your busy workday.
Thank you both for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
We Should Talk About That is created and hosted by Jess Buchanan and Jessica Kidwell. Our production is done by Jarrett Nicolay at Mixtape Studios. The theme song, Be Where You Are, is courtesy of Astra Bia.
To learn more about this or any of our episodes, visit our website at www.westatpod.com and follow us on our social media accounts. We are at WeStatPod on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. This community grows by spreading the word, so follow us and invite others to listen.
And if you like an episode, consider giving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening. We are so glad you are here. Be where you